Well, hello everybody, we're back.
Yes, we're back. It's like a new signing, isn't it? Not been out, been out for ages. And the Sky is Blue podcast, which we've got a new name today. It's that Our Frost Covers Are Better Than Your Frost Covers podcast, which we were going to do a pre-Wrexham thing. Hey, well, you know, supporter donations do come in useful every now and again. And I wonder just how hard they've tried to save the match. You know, you never know. Long trip back from Eastleigh the other day. Who knows? Anyway, Phil Tooley, Paul Fisher, Stuart Basson and Daryl Carpenter here to talk about whatever Chesterfield have been doing since we last talked about a podcast. And Stuart been doing pretty well. Let's forget what other teams are doing in the division. More than 2 points a game, more than two goals a game, into the third round of the FA Cup for the second consecutive season, and unbeaten in the FA Trophy and the Derbyshire FA Cup as well. Hey, things are going well.
Well, you could almost say that they couldn't go better, couldn't you? But obviously you look at the league table and they're also going well for a number of other teams. It's just our rotten old luck, isn't it, really? But, yes, in all that, we equaled a 91-year-old club record just prior to the Halifax game by scoring in 22 competitive first-team fixtures from the start of the season.
Wow.
Unfortunately, Halifax was goalless for us, so that meant we only equaled it rather than broke it. I kept quiet about it because I didn't want anybody, and there are people on this very podcast who would accuse me of being a Jonah if I'd have mentioned it on my Twitter feed.
Well, to be fair, I have prepared a clip of the Magnificent Seven theme.
Ah.
So that's not the first time you've done that, Phil, is it, either?
2009 was the last time I did it. It was on a CD then. And that didn't work. Well, that didn't work either. I can't remember who we didn't beat. Might have been some of that Aldershot or somebody that we should have beat. Can't quite remember. But at Saltergate days, I remember. But yeah, a remarkable statistical season, Stuart. But it still needs to be more because of Notts County and Wrexham, of course.
Well, it does. Yes. Where are we going to get more from? You know, we're playing well. We're beating teams. We are, as you say, more than 2 points a game as an average, which is a very difficult thing to actually better. But it just happens that this season there are one club who's bought really wisely and appointed a good manager by the look of it, and another club who we know just sort of throws money at it and buys sort of bigger players for their bigger boot and long throw game. And then there's Woking just behind or occasionally just in front of us, you know, who must also be having a more than 2 points a game season. I suppose, well, there are some terrible clubs at the bottom, aren't they, which evens it out. And that's where all the extra points come from. Can everybody sustain it? That's the thing, you know, as long as we sustain it, then we give ourselves a chance.
You know? Yeah. And Paul, just picking up on some of those points, really, we'll talk about the clubs at the bottom, Scunthorpe and Oldham, having come down from the EFL last season. But, you know, the games that were lost when everybody was sort of doom and gloom, Maidenhead, Dagenham and Redbridge, Eastleigh, those three on a bounce against teams that, to be honest, everybody was expecting to get more than that, beat them all, really. But the sustained form has been there all season, apart from that 8-day period, hasn't it, Paul?
Yeah, that week was a real strange one, wasn't it? You know, they came up a cropper against two sides that worked harder than they did on that day. And then, obviously, down at Eastleigh, we got done with a 90th-minute goal, didn't we? And it could have gone, really took a point from that game. I think either side should have taken a point. But yeah, it's just a real bad week. And I'm just hoping that week doesn't affect them, you know, in the latter stages of the season. I'm hoping that Wrexham and Notts County have that one week where they come a cropper against some sides, you know. So, because they've set the standard so far, and you know, so many records being broken this season, and we're still in third place, you know, trying to push into that top two. It is quite amazing.
But Daryl, I mean, before a ball was kicked, ask anybody who knows anything about the National League, and they said, well, it's between Notts County, Wrexham and Chesterfield. And the fact that Paul just mentioned well, Stuart mentioned about Woking being next. You know, we look over our shoulder place, and you don't necessarily, I'm not saying it won't happen, but you don't necessarily see a challenge for the top three coming from anywhere else, do you?
No. I mean, if you look back to this time last year, Stockport, who had been pre-season favourites, had had that really iffy start under Rusk, hadn't they? I think Challoner had come in end of November time, and they just started to pick up. But, I mean, they were well down the table. They might have even been sort of 10th or 12th. And then they went on that ridiculous run from nowhere and just kept it going. They had a little blip towards the end where they wobbled a bit and then almost fell over the line, didn't they? But I don't see another team in the division this year a la Stockport. I just don't see it. I think Solihull are a worse team and squad than they were 12 months ago. Woking, I think, have gone full-time and obviously thrown a bit of money at it, so they're having a go. But can they sustain it over 46 games? I suspect probably not. Two of the stalwarts, Bromley and Boreham Wood, haven't really had their normal seasons, have they? You know, they've lost games you wouldn't expect them to lose in past years, while ever we've been in the division anyway. So I don't see a dark horse coming out of the pack. I think it will be between the three of us. We've had a iffy spell. I suspect we'll have another one before we've done. But I also suspect Notts and Wrexham will as well. So a long way to go, yeah. Long way to go.
There certainly is an awful long time. But yeah, well, as you mentioned, Woking, you're throwing a few quid at it and everything along those lines. And you know, they've bought in some decent players. Again, they've gone to the League Two, got the likes of Sid Nelson, the former Chesterfield player in there, Porrig Amond, who we know well over the years. Jim Kellerman's gone there from the Sparrites, of course. James Daly from Stevenage, Luke Wilkinson from Yeovil, Rhys Grego Cox from Crawley. So they have recruited very well, and it seems to be working for them, Daz.
Yeah, they're having a go, certainly. They had a bit of a stuttering start, didn't they? But they've obviously had a consistent run, certainly in the last 6 to 8 weeks. But again, on Saturday, bit of a strange one, wouldn't it? I think York went down to 10 men and they nicked a second goal and beat them 2-0. And with the form York have been on and their new manager having just arrived, sadly, I hear it now in hospital with some kind of COVID breathing issue. That was a bit of a bolt out of the blue. So it can happen to anyone, as we know, in this division. If you're not on it any given day, like we weren't at Halifax and like we certainly weren't for those three games that week, you know, you'll lose. It's as simple as that. Or you'll certainly drop points.
I've just looked at the record, and in all competitions, they're not 1-10. And then they go away to the team who started the afternoon and win 2-0. Like you say, against with only 10 men, it was 1-0 at 10 men, and then shot Mr. John Lewis scored late on to sort it out. But the last few weeks for Chesterfield, with that long run of unchanged sides, but with a pretty regular trio of substitutes coming on, Stuart. We've got Ukeg Boolam, Kate was coming on for Dobra, Shanger on for Quigley, and Akinola on for Whelan, seemingly week after week after week after week. But the game on Saturday against Dorking just reinforced to me how deep the squad is. Five changes and massive change when the substitutes were brought on. And that must augur well for Chesterfield coming up to the busy Christmas period.
Yes, I'm sure it will. It certainly made a change, didn't it? Bringing those guys on, and not necessarily, I suppose, changing the way we tried to play, but it just made us that much more effective. Took the opposition by surprise. That's what you want subs for, isn't it? You know, and there will be that cover over the whole Christmas period. You know, we do have a quite a large squad. I think, not by some of our recent standards, of course, but it's capable players now as well. The interesting thing is trying to keep all those capable players satisfied. There are people who might get on the bench every other week, but probably won't get on the pitch if Cookie continues to use his same three subs, and why shouldn't he? Because it works. So I wonder if in January we might see more people going out on loan or leaving the club. You know, some of those who have come in the summer perhaps and haven't made an impact might want to move on. But we do have considerable strength now across almost all of the positions as well. There's a depth for everybody, isn't there? But the ability just to change, just to make a sort of slight tweak by bringing on those three substitutes all at more or less the same time, it changes us completely. If we're not playing particularly well, or if we've gone off the boil a bit. And it's so good to watch. I mean, Jez, I'm not sure what the record is for number of substitute appearances by a single player in a season, but if he carries on like he is, he's going to come close to it by the end of it, certainly.
Going to beat Scott Bowden, is he?
Well, I was going to say, you only have to check Scott Bowden, John Howard, Roger Willis.
Yeah, that's true.
It's interesting because some of them have come in from the start of games and they haven't been that effective, have they? We don't know what Tim Akinola would be like, but we're so well blessed in the position that he would play.
But Paul, just talking about Akinola and Uke Bulum particularly, because we know all about Chimanga and everybody else knows all about Chimanga. But those two guys who come from nowhere, never been regulars in professional football before they came to Chesterfield. Yeah, they're pretty lightning from minute one if they do start. But when they're playing tired legs and they come on at 60, 65, 68, they're devastating, aren't they?
Yeah, you wanted to see that Akinola driving run for the second goal, I think it was, or it might have been the third from Saturday. Just picking the ball in his own half and sprinting right into the other side and then fed Uke Bulum. You know, so it was,
If you look at that goal, and there's a clip on Twitter, it's not on the highlights package. It's on a clip that's on Twitter that shows the 2 minutes, 32 seconds between the two second and third goals. It's only on that clip that Akinola wins the ball on the edge of his own 18-yard area. And then flies forward, leaves one, through two, passes it out to the left side. And if you follow that goal from Akinola winning the ball, there isn't a Dorking player touches it. And it's pass after pass after pass, and sensible thinking and sensible passing, and the final ball in. It might have been one of the easiest goals in the season. But if that's not goal of the season, there's something wrong. But you've got to see it from Akinola winning the ball.
From that particular point,
And of course, the second one was a devastating run from the third goal, the second in the 2.5 minutes, was that devastating run from Uke Bulum. And I know Dorking had got illnesses and injuries and everything, and I know they'd been forced into three substitutions, which meant they couldn't use the substitutions they want. But the guy, when he saw Uke Bulum taking off from the halfway line, just thought, "Well, I'm not going to catch him.
Yeah, I'll just leave him." There's
no point waiting. On a useless piece of running.
Exactly, and then typical Joe is he did really well to spin and turn, get the shot off, but then it dribbled into the net, didn't it? Without any conviction, it just got a little deflection and then just fell over the line. So he does all the hard work.
I haven't listened back to my commentary or indeed your commentary on that, Paul, but I reckon I was blowing it in.
Yeah.
I reckon there's a little bit of. Because it was painful, wasn't it? It's a good job it was at 2-1, not at 1-1. Otherwise, it would have been quite frustrating. But, Paul Cook, over the years, first spell and now Daz, he just seems to unearth players that we'd never heard of before, and just think, well, why has nobody else picked those up?
Yeah. Well, there was a whole host of them, weren't they? And I think a lot of that was down to the chief scout at the time, Paul Mitchell. Yeah. Who went on to do an equally good job at Bramall Lane, didn't he? But yeah, he does seem to spot a player very quickly. I suspect Jez wasn't on anyone's radar until that pre-season match.
They knew who he was because he'd been championed from the academy side, the academy setup, who knew of him. Justin Tellis was aware of him. He's got good close links with Matlock, so they were aware of him without necessarily even being on the "we need to get him" radar.
Yeah. But he obviously impressed significantly in one 90-minute kickabout to earn himself an opportunity, and boy has he taken it. You know, I think about the game over at Altrincham where we were one down and struggling. He came on for Dobra or Asante because I think they both went off injured that day, and helped turn the game back. I know he wasn't directly involved in the goals, but certainly he pinned down that left side, got their fullbacks going back towards their own goal instead of towards ours, and changed the whole flow of the match. And he's done that more than once, hasn't he?
It makes the opposition think, oh, we've got to double up on him. So it forces them to do something different, doesn't it? And that opens up the gaps in the middle. And it particularly opens up the gaps for Akinola.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you've heard Mark White's post-match interview from Dorking on Saturday, and he just said, you know, I thought we performed really well under the circumstances, but when they could bring legs on like they did with Akinola and Uke Bulum, he said there was no way we were going to win the match. He said because they were just too quick, had too much energy, he said, and we couldn't match it. He said, you know, and they literally ran through us for the last 15 minutes, which is what we did, you know.
I know you won't be able to check this, Stuart, at all, but there won't be many times that right from the first corner kick, the opposition leaves three up every time.
Oh, good Lord. No. That was interesting to watch, wasn't it? You know, and you applaud that kind of initiative, you know, that somebody has thought, well, why don't we do it? What's going to happen? Let's give it a try, you know. Because plenty of people would say, oh, you can't possibly do that because then you'll be short yourselves defending your own corner. But sometimes it's easier to defend when it's less crowded, you know.
From a goalkeeper's perspective, there's less people to bump into when all you're doing is looking up, watching the flight of the ball and coming across it. There's five or six less people in the box.
If your three that you've left up are clued up enough to know that when the ball comes out, they've got to come back and pick it up, as they were doing. You know, if it's your tactic and you can play it like that, then yeah, why not? And you applaud that kind of brightness in management, or what you should do, I think. Mm. You know.
And it was great to see on day one, of course, in that 2-2 draw when we were down to 10 because of Kovalan. So let's talk about Fitzsimons coming in. Clearly a last minute gasp signing because Kovalan had got red card at Dorking on the opening day, but he's not going to give up his gloves easily now Kovalan's back fit, Paul, is he?
No, I can't see Kovalan actually getting a start. I noticed he was out on the field on Saturday training before the start of the game with Chadwick and Fitzsimons, but man, I appreciate that he's on loan and he'll be getting paid and etc. So you know, taking up his wages and everything, but you know what? Why would you drop Fitzsimons right now? But I don't think there's any reason to do that.
And in front of Fitzsimons, it had been Williams and Grimes just about all season. There's an odd match that Williams didn't play. Grimes played every minute of every match. Now Palmer come into the mix. Good signing, Paul.
Yeah, very good. Obviously knows that division has a bit of competition there. Kind of feel sorry for Williams a little bit because he's been playing really well. So, you know, being taken out of the starting 11 there to somebody who's equal to you, then maybe. It is a good signing. Could be key for the remainder of the season. Obviously, there's going to be injuries. coming in to going towards the back end of the season. But I think that was a real vital sign. And I think all they need is, when Chimanga goes, a new striker in January. That should be it. That should be all right for the rest of the season.
And we know, Daz, don't we, how hard Paul Cook and the board have been working for that one position that there wasn't a recognised sub, which is right-sided centre-back, right from Malarkey days. That position, not because there weren't two of them, you know, and that was reinforced when Cook went out on loan to Dorking, of course, and he's always one for the future anyway. But it's been the only position on the radar for a long time, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think we've looked at a good number. And we were almost taken by surprise when Palmer became available. I think we'd heard on the grapevine that he'd been talking to Oldham and one or two other clubs in that neck of the woods. Clearly, what first team football, they'd gone from playing three at the back at Stockport to two at the back, and one of the guys they brought in the summer was keeping him out the side. There was, I think Dave Challoner had basically said to him, there was little prospect of him getting in a two. And he was obviously revered by the Stockport fans. I mean, if you look at their message boards when he went, you know, they're all saying what a great servant he'd been, what a good player he still was, which is often important, you know, not that his legs had gone or he was past it or anything like that. And that he's a born leader. And I think he's a winner. That's, you know, he's got nous. He got him promoted, didn't he, from National League North. He then got him promoted again last year. Played a lot of matches, doesn't seem to miss many games. He's a threat in the opposition box, which we don't really have from set pieces very often. He's a real attacker of the ball. If you watch any of the clips on YouTube and stuff, the number of goals he scored from set pieces and corners, he really attacks the ball. If we can get the delivery right, I reckon he'll get half a dozen before the end of the season.
And one of the things, Stuart, is Ash Palmer's paths haven't really crossed with Paul Cook. He spent most of his time in non-league football. He signed for Stockport from Guiseley. He'd been with North Ferriby United. He's a Pontefract lad. He played for Droylsden. But he had a couple of years at Buxton when Martin McIntosh was manager. And Martin McIntosh is a mate of Paul Cook's, isn't he? So I'm sure Cookie had checked the character references with McIntosh, which all managers say it's important. But I think for Cookie, dressing room harmony is more important than getting a good player.
Well, it is. It is, especially if you're going to bring the player in who isn't getting first team football somewhere else. He's going to come here because he wants first team football. And if you're going to have to say to him, well, unfortunately, there are two people there at the moment, you know, so you might have to sit on the bench for a few weeks. You know, you need to know that he's the right sort of player to do all that sort of thing. But it wouldn't surprise me if Cookie spoke to as many people as he possibly could about players that he signs before he signs them, because he strikes me as that sort of meticulous kind of manager, you know, and in the preparation.
And of course, it was unfortunate for Tyrone Williams to have to go off relatively early at AFC Wimbledon in the cup game. But just a couple of days after Palmer had signed, what a glorious opportunity without upsetting anybody to introduce him into a meaningful match.
Well, yeah. That was fortunate from that point of view. But, you know, I mean, if we hadn't gone out and signed Palmer, I suppose Lawrence Maguire would have come on if he'd have been on the bench. But it is just kind of serendipitous, I suppose, from that point of view. But unfortunate, as you say, for Tyrone Williams, who came in at the start of the season and has played particularly well, apart from the odd one or two games that everybody has now and then, you know, in that position. He's done well.
Yeah, and our main opponents, Paul, they've signed a player each or so in the last few days. Cannon has gone from Hull to Wrexham, and the lad who's gone to Notts County, ex-Palace kid, he's not a kid anymore, he's 30 or so.
Last week.
Bostwick, John, yeah, Bostwick's gone to Notts County. But of course, Bostwick's gone in and
Bostock. Yeah, sorry,
Bostock. Sorry, Stephen, really. Bostock's gone in, and they've got Chickson in that position, who's been doing really well this season. So yes, he's a great addition to the squad, but he's not necessarily going to improve the team, because Chickson's been good, and Notts County fans will think he'll be unlucky to be counted out. Wrexham have no doubt signed Cannon, A, because they can, but B, because Davies picked up a long-term injury as well a week or two ago. It's filling a slot that was being filled by a very, very good player. So again, it's not necessary to improve those. Chesterfield, until the last few weeks, had been leaking too many goals. And whilst you could never blame that person, that person, that person, that person, collectively, the back four was letting in too many. Palmer will improve the back four.
Yeah, well, definitely. You would. I mean, the stats suggest that, don't they? Going back to John Bostock, I mean, he was the one who gave away a penalty, wasn't he, for Sheffield Wednesday for Dean Morgan when he attacked him, and Morgan scored from that penalty when Sheffield Wednesday 1-0. Yeah,
well,
he was that was some years ago. So it's about
was that, the penalty? That one.
In
the penalty shootout League Cup game, was that? Or?
No, it was at the Technique. We beat them 1-0. Oh, it was an awful game. Awful game. Neither side deserved to win it, but we did. So, and since then, it was part of the relegation for Doncaster last season. And I think he's been touted as some sort of brilliant footballer, but he seems to have flattered to deceive all the time in the course of his career. And I think it's a bit of a gamble from Notts County's point of view. The Bostock to come in and sit in. I wouldn't state that he was a one that, you know, he's a name, I think, rather than a good player. So I don't rate him at all, but that's just my opinion. But I don't, I wouldn't say he improves Notts County.
Well,
really.
I noticed on their headline, on the headline Twitter, that they said he'd played for Forest, Palace, and Toulouse. Mm. He made his debut for Palace at 15. He's now 30. And those three teams that they mentioned in the headline, he played 18 games between them.
Yeah.
It was picked out those teams because he sounded sexy. But, you know, he didn't really play for them.
Yeah. Well, I think he's a League Two player and they've signed him for the National League. So, you know, naturally they think, oh, he's going to be good. So, you know, and I think that sometimes the League Two, your League Two players are no better than your National League player. Players so that they're in, so even the ones at the bottom of the National League, some of them are better than League Two footballers from what we've seen against AFC Wimbledon and Northampton, but there's two prime examples.
Just looking at that Sheffield Wednesday side in that match you were talking about, Paul, Bostock came as a relatively early sub for Johnson, must have got injured, and Wednesday started up front with O'Grady and Ryan Lowe. O'Grady was replaced by Gary Medine, so there's a bit of a spiral, I think, in there. Morgan came off the bench as well. He came on for Gregor Robertson just after half time.
Yeah, and Bostock brought him down. And Chesterfield were kicking towards the north stand. They brought him down, and then Morgan scored with a real poor penalty as well. It seemed to want to go along the ground into the corner, but yeah, Chesterfield got all 3 points that day.
Impudent, I think you call it, Paul. It was an impudent penalty. It was a typical Dean Morgan penalty.
Yeah.
And he must have grabbed the ball quick because Jack was on the park at the time. And he didn't get the penalty. So wasn't after that one that was even worse than Harry Kane's at Lincoln, was it?
That one
killed three pigeons, I think, not just the one. We've touched on the game against Wimbledon. Of course, the match before that, Northampton. And it was a 1-0 win over Northampton, but very, very comfortable. A 2-0 win away at Wimbledon, ridiculously comfortable.
Yeah.
You have to say that, I know I've piped up about this a little bit. It surely shows that the gap between League Two and EFL deserves better than 1+1 in the promotion stakes, Stu.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, it's four up, four down from League Two to League One. So why shouldn't it be four up, four down between League Two and the Conference? National League, forgive me. You'd lose more teams, wouldn't you? There's a danger. You'd always come down, you know, out of League Two into the Conference. But if you do that now, then you're stuffed, really, for getting back out, aren't you? You know?
Let me just pick up on that point a little bit more. Live table, 24th place, Scunthorpe. 22nd place, Torquay. 21st place, Oldham. 19th place, Yeovil. 17th place, Aldershot. 15th place, York. All relatively recent Football League clubs in the bottom 10.
Yeah, a load of those were basket cases when they came down. Some of them are still basket cases, like Scunthorpe and Oldham to a certain extent, which is why they are where they are. You know, until they get everything sorted out off the field, they won't be able to progress on the field. We found that out. And I think everybody who comes down as a basket case finds that out. You know, York and Torquay have both been in the division below this one. They have to come back out of it, you know. But they're both reasonably well supported clubs for this standard. But you know, you look at League Two, and who have you got in there? You've got Stevenage, Crawley, Morecambe, all these, you know, all these teams that have come up out of the Conference or whatever National League, and have managed to sustain a place in there. In some respects, you know, from the point of view of playing some decent sides and getting decent gates and decent away fans and all that sort of thing, I hope we don't go up. But that's the only reason why I hope we don't go up, of course. But you know, if we do go up and the first match is Morecambe away and the next match is Fleetwood at home or something like that, you know, it's not really the stuff to get the blood pumping, is it? But I suppose that, you know, you have to play what's in the division, don't you? But yeah, there should be more up and more down than there are at the moment. Three sounds like a bit of a concession, you know. If it's four up, four down, good enough for the division that you're trying to get out of in League Two properly, then it should be four up, four down between League Two and the one below. And then you've got four down and four up out of the division, you know, below the National League, division, haven't you, in effect? You know, so there's a certain symmetry to that.
No, that makes sense. I can't agree more. And carrying on the cup theme, Daz, there are a lot of people sort of shrug the shoulders about the third round draw, West Brom at home. I personally were absolutely delighted for a number of reasons. One, we've never played West Brom in our lifetime, friendly match apart, so no competitive game since 1948. And did you know, Stuart, it's only the third time ever we'll be welcoming a team in to our home ground in the FA Cup as a five times cup winner or more. There's only twice before a team come to our ground as five time or more cup winners. I'll let you think about that for a minute while I talk to Daz about the West Brom tie. But I know they've improved a little bit in the last week or two after Steve Bruce has gone and the new manager has come in. But they'll be more worried about dropping down to League One than getting to the fourth round of the FA Cup. It's a winnable one, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought that. Obviously, I think we would all like another bumper away day somewhere, just for the glamour of it and the cash. I'm sure the club wanted the cash. I know, speaking to Andy Phantom, he would have rather had the cash. But the club are in confident mode, and I know from conversations I've had that Cookie's delighted with the draw. He thinks it's eminently winnable. Get a full house there that day. I'm sure they'll sell out their allocation. I'm sure we'll sell out ours. We can beat them on the day. Might need a little bit of luck, but they're no great shakes. Their confidence isn't fantastic. Some of them will have been on the beach for a month as well, don't forget. Being in the Championship, I think they've just restarted, haven't they? It'll be all to play for, and get an early goal, I'd fancy it strongly. And I wouldn't mind a replay down at the Hawthorns, because I've never been there either. So.
No. And I have been to the Hawthorns a couple of times, but it's one of only, I think, five of the 92 League and Premier League clubs that have not done some form of reporting from. So I'd tick that one off. So I'd be happy with a draw. But you were saying about the crowd, Daz. I used to work for Tarmac and be based in Wolverhampton, so I know quite a few Wolves fans and Baggies fans particularly. And somebody I keep in touch with is a Baggies season ticket holder. And they have an away season ticket section as well. And he doesn't think he'd necessarily be able to get a ticket.
Well,
with 1,800 or whatever in the North Stand, they're badgering the club for the East one as well.
Right.
But I think the club want to see how it goes before they release those. But I think it's terrific. At the end of the day, I've not worked this out, Stuart, but they're three sections above us. Bearing in mind, we've been in the league nearly all the time. We don't play teams at home three sections above us. This is a really unusual tie.
Yeah, you'd have to look for a fourth division Chesterfield against first division opponents, wouldn't you?
Which yes.
Obviously wouldn't have happened very often.
It doesn't happen.
Off the top of my head.
Anyway, in case you, I don't know if you've thought about the only previous time we've boosted teams in the FA Cup who, at the time
Daz has got his finger up. Hang on.
I'd go Villa and Arsenal for two.
I would go Villa and Blackburn Rovers.
Well, Arsenal, when we played Arsenal at home in the Cup, Daz hadn't won the FA Cup, so they were not five times when they came. They won it 14 times since, but they won it at that time. Because in the old days, winning the FA Cup was hard. You didn't get times in a day like you do now. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. Blackburn Rovers, 61, and Villa in the 30s. Because they both won the cup a lot in the early days.
Yeah.
So it was always going to be a Football League founder, for want of a better term. It's only the third time we've ever welcomed a five times cup winner to our ground. It's a special tie. It might not be the sexiest there's ever been.
No. I was delighted with it when it came out of the app. I get all the, away at a money bags club that's going to have 45,000 people all paying money into our coffers and all that. I get all that. But, it'd be nice sometimes to be able to see some of the better sides just by walking over the road from where I live to the football ground instead of having to get on a bus at 5 o'clock in the morning,
And we were unlucky with the draw, not because of West Brom at home, but the fact that there are some crackerjack ties in there that you can understand why the telly's gone for those. The only one I don't really understand is the Everton Man U, but they've done that for audience numbers, clearly.
Yeah.
But you can't argue with Oxford against Arsenal or whatever. But the amount of effort that the BBC particularly put in talking about non-league clubs and then not to cover any of the non-league clubs is a bit strange. But apart from Everton Man U, I get all the other ones. I get them. And when I looked down the drawer at the time, I thought, we might be on telly, but probably not. So, the other non-league ties weren't attractive enough.
Accrington to be under the radar.
Yeah. Well, if nobody went to that match and all the Accrington and Boreham Wood fans watched it on telly, it wouldn't be a huge audience, would it? Really?
No.
So I'd be delighted if we're in the hat for the next round, because it'll either mean we've won or we've drawn. So,
if we draw, get a replay, go down to their place, then hopefully the gate money from both games will be more or less the same as we'd have got if we'd have been drawn away at a Premier League club again.
Replays don't pay as much television money as the original games, if there's only a handful of replays, it'd probably be on telly anyway, even though it's the wrong way round. It'd probably be, and you get about half the money or 40% of the money for a replay, don't you, compared to the real thing. But it's money to the clubs. It's not money that's split like the gate that money is. And talking about knockout competitions, Paul, how do you, with the Wrexham game being off, might have been different if the Wrexham game had been on. But with the Wrexham game being off, how do you think Cookie and Co will play it against Colville on Saturday in the trophy?
Well, before the Wrexham game, I would have thought he'd made those players that haven't been starting, they would have started straight away. Now, it might make a little bit more of a tweak. It might be a little bit stronger than we would have done going in. But having said that, the Woking game is the more important game, obviously, on the Tuesday night.
Yes.
So I still expect, nine of the non-first team players that have been playing, like Shackleford's to play on Saturday. Even Chadwick, I think, will start on Saturday, I think. Williams.
Coughlin's ready, I think he'd start.
Maybe Williams will play with that. Those that Williams haven't been playing.
Williams, Maguire, Shackleford.
And
Clements, you'd expect to be the back four, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Almost. And hey, that's not a bad back four. But I don't know how seriously they'll take the trophy. But the finals at Wembley, and of course the National League playoff final has been announced at Wembley in the last week or so. I think that's definitely going to be well. Ashton Gate and West Ham the last 2 years. But Colville did win at Notts County in the FA Cup, didn't they?
They did. Yeah, they did, and they brought they asked for 1,000 tickets for the game on Saturday. So I don't know if they've sold them all or anything.
Oh,
but
have they?
Yeah.
I know they Notts County, but it's not very far from Notts County.
I've just bought mine online before we started, and if they've asked for 1,000, there's probably going to be 750 more of them than there are of us at the moment.
Yeah, it might be one of those where it's a struggle. I mean, the weather conditions, looking at the long-term forecast, it's going to get warmer by the weekend, so I can't have any problems with the game going ahead.
And I certainly know that two of the
I don't think we've got a reason to call it off for a frozen pitch, have we?
No, I don't think so.
Well, they were coming up from Colville. I was talking about West Brom Pals, where I used to work at Tarmac. I had a lad who came from Colville, a village just next to Colville called Hungerscote, who worked for me for a few years, but most recently in 1994. That's how long ago. That I'd been seeing a mutual friend of ours. I saw a couple of weeks ago, first time I'd seen him for years and years as well. And he said, I reckon Dave Turner's died, you know. And I said, well, I've not heard of him for a long time. He said there was an obituary and he'd left a wife, Linda, and Dave's married to Linda. And so I said, well, and I tried to find it, couldn't find any reference. I've not got Stuart's powers of researching such sort of things. But anyway, as soon as the draw came out, he messaged me. I thought, oh, you're not dead then.
You're not dead.
So he's coming up. And ironically, he's not a football supporter at all, or he never was. But it just shows the power of the community. So he's definitely coming up on Saturday. So I look forward to the opportunity to see him for the first time since I don't know when. So, what a great achievement for Colville, who are a relatively new club, and they didn't used to be called Colville. They've only been called Colville for a relatively short amount of time because they moved from a different village, which I just can't quite remember the name of. But there is a chance that there might be as many of their fans as ours, as you were saying, Stuart. And that could change the dynamic.
Well, it'll be an interesting game to watch. Yeah, I'll be grateful if Paul can tweet a copy of the team sheet again. That's always very useful. Thank you very much.
Well,
BBC never report it, do they? So on their website.
Well, I always like the 4-4-2 formation that BBC puts out on their website when you've got DJ Baker at left back and Tyrone Williams.
Lawrence Maguire, even though he's not playing at right back.
Alphabetical order or something, isn't it? Yeah.
I know we've all been concentrating, Paul, on the Wrexham from a home perspective. But I don't know if you looked at Colville yet, but one of their players is somebody who we all know very well, Billy Key, who finished playing full time football for health reasons, mental health reasons. I think he became a painter and decorator or something like that, if I remember. I can't quite remember exactly. But he plays for them, as does Ashley Chambers, who has played for the likes of Dagenham and Redbridge and Grimsby Town over the years. So they've got a decent player or two. Chris Robertson, who was a youngster at Sheffield United, although he's not young now, who had 5 years at Torquay United. He's in their squad, so they've got a bit of class.
Yeah, they can put it back. It's whether they could, because with them being part time now, it's whether they've got their sort of extra little bit You know, can they keep up with you Kegbulums and Akinolas? Can they do that? But no, they'll certainly give us a game, definitely. Billy Key's a good point. Obviously, he left Accrington due to his mental health status. Couldn't cope with being a full-time professional footballer and got a bit homesick moving down to the middle. He's from Leicester, isn't he? Around that area, any in Leicestershire. Yeah. And never wanted to... never really wanted or took to being a full-time footballer, but he's a real thorn in Chesterfield's side. I seem to remember over the years.
It really has been. He was one of those players a la Jack Lester that you used to really hate when they were on the team sheet against you.
Yeah.
Because you knew he was going to do you some damage. He was only a little lad. He's certainly 5'8", 5'9", something like that. Maybe even a little bit less than that. But Paul Cook will have been with him in his first spell at Accrington.
Yeah.
When he was from Leicester. He'll know all about him. And I'd love to see him play again because I always did used to really enjoy watching him play. I think, did he go to Burton from...
He did, yeah. Yeah,
he did, yeah.
And certainly was always a pain in the backside with them as well. So, I'm looking forward to it because I always enjoyed playing somebody a bit different who we've not seen before. And then, as you said, it's the rearranged Woking game after that ball, and victory in that will just put a little bit of a gap in between 3 and 4, and that's a massive thing, isn't it, Daz, to just distance yourself from that fourth place.
Yeah, it'd be a really handy 3 points to get, wouldn't it? The Wrexham game being off, we can just apply a little bit more pressure on those above and certainly open up that gap to the chasing pack. And then, with all due respect to Scunthorpe, they're the next two fixtures, aren't they?
Yes.
Away and at home. You would like to think we might get 9 out of 9 going into the cup tie, which would be a good end to the year, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and straight hot on the heels of the cup tie, it's that postponed game against Wealdstone. That's on the Tuesday after the West Brom game. And then the following Saturday is Notts County. I don't want to look too far ahead, but you've got four on the bounce that you think, we could be getting a good haul there.
Mm.
Not the one that you need the good haul.
Yes, yeah. No, it's a good time to put your foot down, isn't it, Christmas? We all know that. And... we, having not had many home games of late, we've suddenly got a plethora of them again, and you've got to win your home games. That was what was so disappointing about the Maidenhead and Dagenham results, wasn't it? If you look at Wrexham, they're 10 out of 10, aren't they, at home? Don't think Notts, apart from drawing with us and one other, I don't think they've dropped many at home either. So you really got to keep the pressure on teams when you're playing them at home.
This is the Sky is Blue podcast. We'll be back in a moment. We'll have a look at the relative strengths and performances of members of the Chesterfield squad that we've not particularly talked about so far. Well, welcome back to the Sky is Blue podcast with me, Phil Tooley, Stuart Basson, Paul Fisher and Daryl Carpenter. As promised, we'll just have a quick look at one or two members of the squad that we've not particularly talked about so far. Let's start, Daz, Mike Jones.
Yeah, discuss. I remember him being a winger at Sheffield Wednesday and not lasting very long and quickly going back from whence he came. I think it was Bury. Good pro, isn't he? Strikes me as the modern version of the Richie Humphreys signing in many ways. I thought that when he was added to the squad after the start of the season almost, that he just wanted somebody with that nous that he could shove into a variety of positions, knew what the game was all about, cool head under pressure. I like him because he plays the way he faces, which sounds a bit simplistic, but if the ball comes to him and he's facing his own goal, he gives it back to the keeper. And if he's facing the touchline, it goes out or to a blue shirt if he's one free, but if not, it goes out. And, there's no frills with him. He's pulled off two or three tremendous tackles in the box, clean as a whistle to deny a couple of teams already on the counter attack.
wasn't it? Solihull.
And I think he's just the sort of player you need around a squad that's, you know, now we've got Palmer. I think he's another one. You need these kind of characters that have been the distance, know what it takes. And as I say, I've just got that little bit of nous. So I think he's been, and he, I don't think anyone anticipated after the first few weeks of the season him doing other than Banks and Oldacre in the two. But he's even forgone his own principles to a degree, hasn't he, to sit Jones on his own in front of the back four and push the other three in midfield further forward. So, yeah, it's been a good signing, that one.
That's the ultimate accolade, Stuart, isn't it? Just playing him as a one in front of the back four. And but pretty well in all games apart from Halifax, but he was the only person who was on his game at Halifax. And I did the commentary on 1866 Sport with Steve Payne at Halifax, and we were regularly comparing him with Mark Allett. I know it's a different level and everything along those lines, but he's one of those players, Stuart, that you notice that he does everything a-okay, but you really notice him when he's not playing.
He is just like a rock, isn't he? He's just, you know, the Rock of Gibraltar in the middle of the sea there. And he's just, I don't know, he just tidies stuff up, doesn't he? He reads the game ever so well. And he has made a hell of a difference to this side since he came into it. Yeah.
Well, technically, really, I think good. Simons is the Rock of Gibraltar since he was playing there when in the summer, but hey, you know, we'll let you off on that one. Paul, the next one I'll pick out is Liam Mandeville, transformation.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Cookie likes him, doesn't he? From his assists, his goal, his all-round endeavours, and the fact that he goes 90 minutes as well really works in his favour. I can't remember the last time he was substituted, to be honest. I know he has been substituted in a home game, but he plays every week for him, and he gives himself 100%. He said he'd like, I think a post-match after the game on Saturday, he said he'd like to up his assists and his goals a bit more. But, you know, he's certainly improved from when he first came, because he wasn't exactly raw when he first arrived, and he was a bit more of a flair player. But now he's pushed onto the right-hand side, and rather than as a 10, and he seems to be working wonders for him.
And, you know, with him afterwards, I sort of said, why have you become a 90-minute player when you weren't before? And the first thing he said was, I've got a manager who believes in me.
Well, that's a good point, isn't it? So, he fits into that character that Cook wants in his side. You know, if you look back to the 2013-14 team, you know, Tendai Dariqua could be another example of somebody playing on the right. When he wasn't playing right back, you know, he was somebody who played on the right-hand side of the three. You know, even Drew Talbot, for example, would give everything when he was on the park, you know, for it. Very rarely would they get substituted. So yeah, that's what he wants in the characters of his side. You know, he wants players that can play 90 minutes, giving it all, tackle back when you need to. When you lose possession, track back and win it back. And Mandeville's been doing that this season, and that's why he's playing on a regular basis.
Dan's Jeff King.
Yeah. I'm still not convinced Jeff King will be with us if we go up. I'm still not convinced he's got what it takes to be a fullback at Football League level. He can't tackle for a start, which is kind of a prerequisite for a fullback. His assists are unquestionable. He's obviously got a goal in him. I think if anything, he just lacks a yard or two, really, a genuine pace, which I think you need to be a good defender. But at this level, he's going to cause problems, certainly going forward. And if we've got enough stability and Jones sat in front of a Palmer Grimes axis, you know, you'll get away with it. And for what he gives you going forward, he's obviously having a hell of a season. But as I say, I'm personally not convinced he'd be with us if we go up. I might be proved wrong. I often am. But, you know.
But would you take this Saturday's game against Colville to put Shackleford at right back and push King forward either on the right-hand side of the attacking three or the attacking four, depending on whether they play 4-2-3-1 or 4-1-4-1?
Yeah, it's an option, Phil. I suspect because this game tomorrow night's been cancelled, now we'll play a stronger squad Saturday than we would have otherwise done. I think as Paul said, it'll be interesting to see the makeup of the team, because we have got a lot of players who have sat very patiently, and a lot of them haven't had many opportunities. I think that selection on Saturday, as much as it was a reaction to losing Halifax, it was also with one eye on tomorrow night. You know, for me, Jones was having a rest. Clements was having a rest, and one or two others. I just felt he was shuffling the pack with what he hoped would be good enough to get the 3 points against Dorking, but with one eye on Wrexham. And I suspect with us having Woking at home next Tuesday? Next Tuesday.
Yeah.
He'll do similar, because that's obviously going to be third versus fourth or fifth or whatever they might be at that stage. That's another game we really need to win. So the selection for Saturday will be very interesting.
Yeah, and the selection for last Saturday, of course, gave Banks and Palmer and Asante real important minutes as well.
Yeah.
Stuart, I'll give you. I'll throw Joe Quigley at you. Not literally.
Oh, you're on mute. You're on mute, Stuart.
Stuart's mouthing, yeah. Yeah. Joe Quigley.
Yes, well, to the disappointment of many, I'm sure I've turned the mute off now. we completely transformed player again. We always had the work rate, didn't we? You know, the effectiveness was never quite as good as it is now, but he's really bought into that sort of playing Paul Cook way, hasn't he? You know, and he's very good at what he does. And in order to make the side more complete, playing the Paul Cook way, he keeps Kawango Shimanga out of the team, you know? And of course, he is adding goals now. You know, what is it, five this season?
Five, yeah.
You know, so if he finishes up with 10 or a dozen or something, it's probably far more than many of us thought he might do, really, because bless him, he always seemed to be able to get on the end of it, but never quite had the direction or the power or, you know.
We've mentioned in this podcast before about centre forwards that hold up play but don't score, and Steve Fletcher was a hero, having scored
three goals. No, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. You have to look at it from a team perspective, and if your approach is rather than rely on one man who might get his ankle broken by somebody at Weymouth, you know, you want everybody to be able to score, then you have to accept that your number nine isn't going to score as many as, you know, as a single person. And it works for us, you know. It's last season, having Kabongo and relying on him, well, we did, worked for us. This season, having Joe Quigley there playing, I mean, Kabongo is a team player, of course, but Joe Quigley playing in a more sort of team focused attack, you know, that works for us as well. And he does that job really, really well. You know, what a guy to have to be able to bring on, you know, sort of 6 foot, whatever he is. A real handful for defenders when he does come on, especially, you know, Dorking, of course, had the unfortunate substitutions and they lost a centre half, didn't they, before we brought Joe on. But yeah, just to come on and be as effective as he has, he brings all the rest of the team into the game much better than anybody else that we have playing up front. And as much as it means that our talismanic goal scoring forward has to sit on the bench, I'd carry on as we are.
And I know it's not a massive sample on the stats to look at, but matches where Joe Quigley started this season, 67% win rate. Matches when he's not started, 60% win rate. I know it's close, but we've got a better record when he started than when he's not started.
Well, yeah.
And the fans like him as well, don't they? You know, they, I mean, they really do like him.
It is so close, Phil, but if we do get promoted automatically at the end of the season, fingers crossed, we're going to do it by 1 point, aren't we? You know, we're going to do it by the difference between 60% and 66%.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And Paul, Jamie Grimes, every second of the season being on the park.
Yeah, he absolutely loves captaining the side. A bit of a silent sort of captain, really. You'd say you don't see him sort of barking out instructions. He might be a bit more of a leader in the dressing room, for example. But I tell you what, he's a man mountain, isn't he? He's blooming huge. And, you know, Cookie always wants a sort of classy centre-half against a brute, doesn't he, when he has his two centre, because they have to be different. And Jamie Grimes certainly does eat up a lot of balls that come into the box, doesn't he? So he sits into that. Yeah, and who would have thought at the back end of last season that that Jamie Grimes would have played every single minute of this season so far? And you would not have thought that at all. You would have thought you'd expected a new centre-half to come in, a left-hand-sided centre-half. But it's Grimes that,
I was going to say, if Rowe had lasted a week longer, he'd have probably been on his bike, wouldn't he?
Exactly. But he's played, like I say, he's played every single minute and he loves it, you know. He's from Nottingham, so he's not far away and likes it at the club. Same as Jeff King, as Darrell was mentioned. I mean, even though, you know, his tackling is awful, his ability to love the club, and he's never felt more wanted at a football club, which, you know, breeds confidence, doesn't it, in a footballer. And you know, you've got that, you know, they're playing winning football, that always helps, of course, but it does bode well for the future, doesn't it? You know, two talented players. And no, I'm pleased for Grimes, really, because he's turned it around. He was, you know, he was what targeted by a previous manager on occasions last year, and I thought it was bang out of order.
Yeah. I.e. previous manager? Now, let me consider how many previous managers Jamie Grimes has had at Chesterfield.
I don't think...
No, you're right.
And last one of this sort of, let's just pick on the player because I'm looking to the list and I'm just sticking a pin in it. Talking about people who didn't seem to be wanted. Tom Whelan sent on loan to Aldershot after just playing a bit of an appearance at Dorking on the opening day of the season. Came back from Aldershot, came in for the Bromley game, 3-2 win Daz, and all of a sudden he looked a changed player. He was one of the five changes on Saturday after the Halifax game. But all of a sudden, somebody who looked as though the manager was trying to move on has become an integral part.
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? He went for the loan spell, got sent off, didn't he? Was it his first game or second game? And then came back, and it coincided, of course, with our little stumble, Banks being out injured, Cookie changing formation and suddenly needing that extra forward-thinking body in midfield. And once he pushed Oldacre and Whelan alongside one another and said, right, go and play, don't worry about the back door so much now because I've got Mike Jones, he's stepped up to the plate. He's not been quite the goal threat he was when he first came.
He hasn't scored for Chesterfield since April 2021.
Yeah, which kind of bears that out. But he is now at least getting into the positions to do that. I think like most of the 11, he was pretty under par at Halifax, but you're going to get that at this level.
Yeah,
you're going to get that at this level, unfortunately. You know, if they were really consistent players, he'd probably be at a higher level. But in terms of ability, you know, he's one of the most able midfielders we've got. I think the key with Tom will be keeping him happy and dropping him in and out of the team when he's in form. And you've just got to trust Cookie will know when that is. Probably, you know, how he's training and stuff.
Well, after his performance in the FA Cup draw, Stuart, I've booked a session with you to pick up a bit about this of Chesterfield Football Club. So he knows
that. Well, I mean, if you look at the question that he was asked, you know, do you talk about that? I don't suppose they do.
No, but what?
Because it was ancient history. I mean, how old were they when we were getting to the cup semi-final? 10, 11, 12, you know? It might have been a curiosity, but that's about all.
Tom Whelan, just because I've got his date of birth on the screen in front of me, I don't happen to know this, was 1 year and 8 days old.
Well, absolutely. So, you know, I mean, if you went and said to Rodney Fearn, you know, do people at York still talk about when they were in the semi-final? I know Rodney Fearn never played for York, but I can't think of a Town player. Kevin Randall. If you'd have said to Kevin Randall, when you were at York, did they talk about the FA Cup run in the late 1950s all the time? No. No, because it's ancient history, you know? Mm. And he answered that question. Now, unfortunately, it was interpreted as dismissive of that achievement, you know? And if you look around the club, yeah, there is quite a lot of stuff about it still up around the club, you know. So I mean, old Cluffy, when he got into Derby, what was the first thing he did? He told people to go around and take all the old stuff down, throw it out, you know. A huge amount of lovely memorabilia went in a skip at Cluffy's request, just because that, you know, all the 46 cup wins and all of that sort of stuff was stuff that he didn't want people to be reminded about, you know.
It's different different ways, but Whelan was came to the fore really in that 5-1 win at Torquay, which at half time you wouldn't have put your money on it being 5-1, but a bit of a Rolls Royce second half performance, that early goal from Oldacre setting Chesterfield off on the way. And you know, you're close to the club, Daz, you know, with Whelan and Maguire. Of course, Maguire's still technically on the transfer list. Santi isn't anymore. Miller's been paid up. It has restricted Paul Cook's ability to bring in people who he wants to do, I'm sure, hasn't it?
Oh, undoubtedly, yeah. I don't think they anticipated when they put those players on the transfer list that only one would have gone and we'd probably had to pay him something to go. And that's a drain on the budget. If, you know, you look at Danny Rowe still being on the books, I think there's no doubt that Fylde are paying a decent portion of his wages, but probably not all of it, I guess. You know, we've moved Gyasi out, that's no doubt eased things a little bit, and Joe Cook a little bit. So they are having to, you know, watch the pennies, and it will have tied Cookie's hands to a degree. They've managed to find a bit, haven't they, for Ash Palmer coming in, obviously. I don't think there's much of a fee if anything involved. On that one, but there's obviously wages to pay, and you've made a commitment. Have we signed him for 18 months? Did I hear?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a financial commitment. So, yeah, it's difficult. In an ideal world, you'd like to carry 24 or 5, however many, but you know, they need pain, and you need to keep them happy. And I think that's the trick, really, isn't it? You know, we've still got Manny Oyelekia, of course, on the books, being paid. Not likely to appear until the new year. And then again, if he does, is he going to get a game?
You're going to leave out Mike Jones, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a balancing act, and I'm sure the powers that be, it doesn't stray far from the mind any week that, you know, they could do with getting a few more bodies out of the building, ideally.
And do you expect... assuming that somebody comes in for Cabby in January, they only figure the sell-on clause, you know, or all the talk of, well, we shouldn't let him go for less than so-and-so. Well, that's not going to happen. It's a sell-on clause. It might be different to day one, but there's still a sell-on clause and you just have to activate it. Do you think that the way that the club's thinking, they'll A, be able to, or B, will want to bring a replacement in for him?
I'd be speculating, Phil, really, to say. I've not had that conversation, so it'd be wrong of me to say. I mean, my personal opinion is that he was obviously, for whatever reason it didn't go through, was bitterly, bitterly disappointed. And to me, he's not quite the same player he was. I think what he needs actually is a good whack from somebody in a game, just to give him the confidence that he's not going to break his leg and he's going to be able to get up and keep playing. It's like old goalkeepers used to say, you know, you should come out at the feet of a forward, and if you got kicked once, it took months to get the confidence back, and it only really happened when they got kicked again. And I suspect there's a little bit of that with Cabby. And he's not really the one in a Paul Cook
one, yeah,
four one, you know, one up top. He's still a terrific player, great, you know, he's still a goal scorer, he's a predator. I don't think we play to his strengths when he's on the pitch either yet. I still don't think we play in between the lines down the sides of people quick enough for him to go and get away from them. So what will happen with Cabby will happen. If somebody comes in, as you say, meets whatever the clause in his contract is, and it's a Football League club, I think he'll probably go. And whether or not then we can allocate any of what comes in to bringing an extra body into the squad, I would think we will probably have to.
Yeah, and what's yeah, I'm just looking at the list of top scorers in the National League, and it's just on National League games. Langstaff, of course, I'm sure will be on clubs' radars as well. The next couple in the scoring charts are McShane, who played for Dorking last week against the Zoos, a number 10 really, rather than a we got oodles of them. Then Mullin, and he's going nowhere, is he? Then the next batch is Kabamba at Barnet, who's only got 11 goals. Palmer. There's Reece Brown, who's on loan at Woking from, is it Wealdstone? I think he's on loan from Wealdstone. Then you've got Seager, who was the number 9 for Dorking, who did okay, no question about that. And then you're down to single figures scorers, and a lot of those on single figures up in the top of the list. Hayden at Wrexham, who's of course a defender. You've also got Chickson, who's in there as a defender as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, there aren't lots of people down that list who you think, oh yeah, I'd have him in the team. You know, probably Dallas at Solihull, but he plays off a big man generally, doesn't he? He's only 5'10" or whatever. So you know, there isn't. Let's look at who's scoring the goals in the National League. Who would we like? Yes, of course you'd like Langstaff. Of course you like Mullin, but you're not going to get them. And the rest of them, it's a okay. Be a bit underwhelming if they came in. With the greatest respect. So, Manny G. Saruva's in the list of top scorers. And much, you know, that Paul Cook knows all about him. He signed him from Sheffield Wednesday for Chesterfield last time round. You know, we wouldn't all go dancing in the streets, would we?
No.
Not after that performance on Saturday, no. Right.
No, he could have been dancing in the streets throughout the game and we wouldn't have actually noticed that he was dancing in the streets.
I'm sure our war room of recruitment now will have a list of people to replace Cabby with, should that happen. It's whether you get number 1, 2, or 3 on that list, and they won't necessarily be National League players, of course.
Absolutely, and of course, what you want to do, because people will make all sorts of assumptions. Although those in football know probably than those of us who just watch the football, what they will want to ideally do is get that deal done before Cabby's gone. Because then people just assume you've got shed loads of the money. But if you look at the recruits that Paul Cook's brought in this summer, you know, they've come from Barrow, Doncaster, King's Lynn, Maidenhead, Plymouth, Dorking, Ipswich, Barrow. Again, you know, he said Weymouth for Rochby Simons, but it technically it wasn't Weymouth, was it? But, they do come from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
No question about that. Anyway, so still positive, Paul?
Yeah, absolutely. There's obviously some quests to overcome, isn't there, for the remainder of the season. But I think that there's very much a feel-good factor about the club, certainly from the fans' point of view, you get that generally. Good atmosphere, and another good crowd at the weekend as well. 6,200, you know, that's really good. That's something that we wouldn't have dreamed of at Saltergate, you know. So it's all these new fans that are coming to the club are liking what they're seeing, and it's some good football. So you know, you got to be positive about it as well.
Well, seven, Stuart, isn't it? Seven home wins on the trot in all competitions, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I still go along and I still feel fortunate to be able to watch football like that in my local team's stadium, you know? Just like Paul, I'm still tremendously optimistic. Third place will do for me, because third place is as good as second, you know? Obviously, I'd like first, but, you know, if that happens, then brilliant. If it doesn't, well, then let's just be one game away from Wembley instead, you know.
As Stuart says there, Daz, you know, second and third are pretty, you don't know who's going to finish fourth, and you don't know who's going to win the two games between them. But you'd fancy Chesterfield's chances of beating anybody at home in a one-off match. And then you get to a one-off match. Yeah, we only have to look back at Wrexham and Grimsby last season in the playoff semi-final. You know, one-off match, anything can happen, good or bad. But I really can't see anybody getting promoted that's not called Chesterfield, Notts County or Wrexham, does.
No, you would have to say that's highly unlikely. I wouldn't say it couldn't happen, but it would take a great optimist outside those three, wouldn't it? There is not a Stockport that came from nowhere. We said that earlier this time around. Just can't see it happening. So it will be a case of one team's going to be delighted, two are going to be very disappointed. You hope that you're, you know, in that top three in any one of the positions. We all know which one we'd prefer. And then you've just got to do the job, haven't you? You've got to take your chance and do the job. Because there is not going to be a change in the foreseeable to three up, three down, or anything like it. I think until the Football League take over the National League, which I know there are still rumours about, that talks are ongoing to that thing. The turkeys aren't going to vote for Christmas, I don't reckon. It's always been a bit of an anomaly, hasn't it? Why four go up out of what is League Two into League One, and four come down, and it's three in every other division. I've never quite understood the logic of that. So why not just make it three and three and three all the way down the pyramid until you get to what is effectively regional football?
I suspect, and I don't know, so I don't know if Stuart knows anymore, but I suspect when the fourth division was formed at the end of the, we'd had 30 years of Division 3 North and Division 3 South. There was one team, only the champions went up. And I would have thought that part of the, well, we'll vote to have a Division 3 and a Division 4 if you make it easier to get out of it. Been an element of that.
Yeah.
It was all in the same club. It was all the Football League club at that time. Was it Plymouth in the 20s or 30s, finished second, sixth years on the trot?
In Division 3 South, yeah.
Yeah.
And never went up, you know, never have been in the top division, I don't think. It was always four up, four down out of Division 3 and Division 4 when they were formed. But out of Division 3 to 2, it was still only two up, two down, wasn't it, for a long time?
Yeah.
You know, but, and then they expanded that to three.
Clubs weren't really interested in the splitting the Division 3 North into Division 3.
And, of course, Division 1 and Division 2, as was, only had 22 clubs in instead of 24. So, you know.
Who knows the reasons? But like you say, it is turkeys voting for Christmas. But as you look at League Two now, and I'm not looking at League Two now, you have got the Harrogates and the Crawleys and the, I know Accrington are in League One, but you know what I mean. You have got the team that have been in the Conference / National League who'll be a bit more sympathetic. But of course, vote's always a full Football League vote. But the Championship clubs take note, I think, of what they were being told by the lower division clubs on that, and almost directed
and
respect what they thought. But as there are more and more and more of the non-traditional league clubs in there, you'd like to think that they'd be shouting the you wouldn't want them to think now they've got there, let's stay there at all costs. You know,
you'd like to think perhaps that the better clubs in League Two would want to, the bigger clubs in League Two would want to replace clubs who might bring 50 away fans with clubs that might bring 750.
And
make it easier to get out of this division for that reason, if nothing else, just financial reasons.
Absolutely, no question about that. Okay, let's finish up. If there's any points that anybody wants to, you know, and any other business round robin or anything, Daz, have you?
Couple of points. One, I was delighted to be a guest of the club, although the result was horrible. And was winding down in the director's box for the Dagenham game.
Oh, yeah.
And I happened to be sat next to our chairman and his good lady wife at the dinner table. And they were saying how much they enjoyed this podcast. And when were we doing the next one? Or why didn't we do them more often? Because we were essential listening on their long away trips. So there you go. We've got the royal approval from the top table at the club. So that's one thing. The other thing I stumbled across last week was a documentary on YouTube called Gate Money. I don't know if you've come across it.
I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, which is a fascinating insight into the way this National League has been run and was run, particularly during the COVID period, and the allocation of monies from Sport England and Camelot and all that. It's a fascinating watch. If you've got three quarters of an hour to spend, just have a look at it, and you'll come away with your blood boiling a bit like I did,
yes.
I suspect. Yeah. But it's a really good watch. So anyone that's got a spare three quarters of an hour, I think it's called Gate Money, and if you put it into YouTube, you'll find it on there. It was very well done, I thought.
Oh, well, there's a... I think I read a synopsis of it. And, I'll give it a watch on your recommendation. Paul, any other business?
Not really. I had a Sunday carvery at the football club, which I recommend entirely. It was very nice. Yeah.
Did you go large for the extra £2?
Absolutely, yes. certainly did. And it was very good, and we all had a good time. And it was, I recommend anybody to do it, and it's a good idea. So, it well is. Done, club.
No question about it. And you can book that on the events page on the, the New Look website, but it's still the same bits and bobs. We're still picking out a few bugs in the website, including the scorers on the fixture list, which generally, if we'd scored three goals, it only gave two scorers' names.
Akwasi Asante was gone missing, hasn't he, or something like that, wasn't it?
On the bio pages, Jez hasn't made it through just quite yet. So there's a few little bits and bobs on there, including being able to buy your shares. The United Spirites of America are lacking a few shares from across the pond. So I had a message at the weekend from an old school teacher, Neil Shepherd, who lives out in Florida. As well, so plenty of interest burgeoning in North America as we speak. But I have to say the carvery is extremely good. There's no question about that, Stuart.
I was fortunate enough to about a week ago to spend some hours in the company of people that run the trust activities over out of the hub and the East Stand. I pay my money, I come and watch the team, and I sit and watch it and tend to think I'm reasonably well informed about what goes on. I was absolutely gobsmacked to hear what they do, the actual sort of breadth and scope of what they do. Some of the things that they were speaking about, I won't repeat on air, but it's safe to say that the work that they do literally does save people's lives on occasion. And I can't tell you how proud I am that my club is involved in something like that.
And, you know, just to emphasise, as was saying about listening to this podcast, we always try on just about every programme on 1866 Sport on match day to bring either at halftime or after the match interviews associated with the community trust. And I know most people tune in and they listen to the match and then they turn off. But yeah, listen for 20 minutes afterwards. We get the first reaction from the management and the changing room. But we also do play some stuff about what Stuart's just been talking about the community. And, you know, I'm proud that we run that to let people know. And I know I've sponsored, me and my wife Sylvia have sponsored some places at Camp Inspire, which is an absolutely terrific initiative. The one thing that I wanted to say is look out. It'll be this month. I'm not sure exactly when it is, but a new supporters forum that will be made up of a cross section of supporters linking in with the board of directors, and will be being launched, and that will spawn a monthly I don't know what we're going to call it, drop-in surgery type of thing on a monthly basis. So look, people look out for that. It's an opportunity to bring supporters and the club ever closer together. So a good initiative. It's been talked about for a while, and for a variety of reasons not got going, but it's ready to get going. I was there at a meeting on Saturday before the Dorking match, and it's more than bubbling under as we speak. And I think there's a board meeting this week to hopefully sign off that sort of stuff and give the authority to the right level of people. Paul, you got your finger up in the air. Either you're going to pick got another point.
No. I'd just like to be able to speak to Paul Cook one day before the season's out, if that's possible.
Well, I've not spoken to him for a while, other than meeting him in the car park or chatting with him off air. I think he came up. Did he come up?
Halifax.
Relatively. Halifax. It was Halifax.
Yeah.
You know, so he does come up, but again, you know, I know the argument with Radio Sheffield, Paul. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I know it. But equally, you know, he still is happy to keep out of the limelight as much as possible. And of course, what it's done is given everybody the loving with Danny Webb, who we were all devastated when we thought that he but clearly they got the wrong Web, didn't they?
Yeah, his dad were going to move there, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Last time I saw him, he looked all right, but I didn't think he'd necessarily be doing 75 hours a week in Yorkshire.
No.
And best wishes to the David Webb at York City, because he's not too well just at the moment, is he?
No.
So hopefully he recovers pretty soon on the touchline he was hired to do. And nice little setup at York, wasn't it, Paul?
I like it, yeah. Really, really good. The seats are incredible for the press. They've got padded seats with arms as well. Honestly, it's like luxury.
Yeah. I mean,
in Yorkshire. You know, it's luxury in Yorkshire.
Well, plenty of room at Wimbledon for the press.
That's right, yeah. They've got a really nice ground. I quite like that. Because I went to the bar after the game, and it's very nice, I should say. Not London prices though.
Yeah. Oh no, well, you know, they're reasonably good that way with supporters. They're just Don's Trust, the community trust. All the Don's Trust is a one member, one vote organisation. They've just had their elections, and an old supporter direct colleague of mine, Kevin Rye, voted on there for the first time. So good luck to Kevin. Good luck to them. But they didn't have any luck on the day that they played us, because we absolutely outplayed them. And that's why we need more promotion places to the EFL. So thanks for listening. Might be on your way down to some long distance match.
Wilton or something, right?
Yeah, it's longer than the trip to Scunthorpe, I think, this one, isn't it?
So, well, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the first half going to Scunthorpe and the second half coming back, Phil.
I hope we've done all right. So from me, Phil Tooley, Paul Fisher, Stuart Basson and Daz Carpenter, we'll see you whenever we see you next time round. And I think for various reasons, we'll all be together next time. We might even have an opportunity for public to come and listen to us and interact. You never know.
Of the night, a dawn's early light. In fact, all day through will be a spy right. This is that we recite, we love and despise the ups and the downs, cause we're a spy right.
This podcast, then don't forget to subscribe. Please rate and review us on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, and many of your favorite podcast providers.